podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is the Anfield Wrap. After the champions of England were defeated by 7-2 by Aston Villa, it is Neil Atkinson. I have with me John Gibbons, Paul Cope and Kev Walsh. Sadly, Rob Gutman couldn't make it with virtue of the fact that Liverpool got beat 7-2 by Aston Villa. Otherwise we'd have Rob here and it'd all be lovely. It'd be great to see him. But Liverpool got beat 7-2 by Aston Villa and he just decided, broadly speaking, it wasn't for him. This should be for you. We will go through lots of ins and outs of it, lots of the key questions. If you think we haven't got to something, we probably will as it wears on. But Kev Walsh, the first thing to say is there's a strange feeling of losing in general with this Liverpool side. It just doesn't happen very often. And then there's losing like that. And it does feel as though, we got hammered by Watford when they beat us. It does feel a bit like one of the things we do is if we're going to get beat.
Yeah, the first thing, as you say, is getting beat doesn't really sit very easily with us anymore, which is obviously a good sign. But as mad as it is to say, you'd almost rather, I said that when City beat us after we'd won the league, I'd rather he tonked us than we put up a really good performance and then get beat. And I think I'm quite similar with this. I know, listen, no one wants to get battered 7-2, obviously, but by getting beat 7-2, you can sort of go, well, we'll draw a line under that, then won't we? We'll all just move on. Whereas if you get done like 2 or 3-1 or something like that and you've had a good go and it just hasn't really gone your way, you can start thinking, well, is there a couple of issues here? Is there some real problems? Whereas I don't think anyone thinks Virgil van Dijk's finished because he's been beat 7-2, do you know what I mean? So you can just sort of say, Virgil, you were absolutely shite there, mate. So less of that and more of the other stuff and just move on from there.
I will come on to the key questions because there is maybe a bit of ramifications, maybe, John. We might sit here and decide that there aren't, but we'll get on to them. I think there is a little thing to bear in mind with it is the heads do fall off in quite a dramatic way. And in the same way that we're not used to getting beat, it is worth saying, I've been saying a lot recently, this Liverpool side is the best team in the world at 0-0 and at 1-0 in either direction. In part because of that, they're not very used to being 2 goals behind in games. And I think they were pretty dreadful at all stages. They were 2 goals behind yesterday.
They were. I think they were a bit unlucky in a couple of times, I would say, The 4-2 going straight to 5-2 with another deflected goal, stuff like that, was like, I thought, here we go, you know what I mean? They might do something, not win, but maybe sort of get it back to 4-0, and then it just hits someone else in the face and goes in the corner. And you're like, so I didn't get much of an opportunity to see what they were like 2 down for that one, I would say. And I'm not saying we were unlucky because we were well beaten and stuff like that, but there was just a couple of times, where I just thought, oh, here we are, we might be sort of, might get back into this, or we've had a little decent spell earlier and then something ludicrous just happened. And
it is maybe worth saying, John, isn't it, that listen, we're going to talk about the goalkeeper and the incident in the 4th minute of the match, but maybe the key moment of the game is the 2 minutes after we make it 2-1, which culminates in the McGinn deflected effort. That's maybe the turning point of the match, that at that point, if Liverpool had got in at 2-1, you never know, things might be a bit different. They might create an opportunity. What I would say is I thought Villa were great immediately after getting pegged back to 2-1. They do actually play really well, push us back, and then get they earn the look, baby.
Yeah, and we give the ball away softly in midfield as well, and they get a corner, and so there's elements of Villa being good and elements of us sort of being a bit shit, which was sort of common theme throughout. I don't know, I just think, like, with the heads down thing, I think part of the issue is I think the TV have done too good a job of making it all look normal, and so they're doing all the, they're just pretending like everything's just normal. Oh, it's just footy now, footy's just back and it's exactly how it was, and we're going to pipe noise in at home so you can all pretend there's crowds and stuff. It's fucking mad, and they don't get any of that. They're walking out to empty stadiums. It's basically turned into, and then all the mates are getting COVID. It's basically turned into like a better version of Sunday League, where you're just like, oh, fucking hell, did they get beat 7-3? Oh, yeah, but four of them are hungover. Do you know what I mean? It's like, that's what it's turned into, do you know what I mean? It's like, it's mad scores. It's like, instead of hangovers, because, these lads are all very professional, it's like, it's coronavirus, and like, it's just going to be, and I knew it was going to be insane, but I thought we'd be fine for some reason. I was like, all the other leagues going to be batshit crazy, and we're just going to do what we did last year. And apparently we're not. Apparently we're just going to be mad as well. And I think people just need to turn that crowding noise off and just watch it as it is, and then people will realise this is just fucking mad, this.
Things do fall for Villa, but they're excellent, Paul, in amongst all of this madness. They they have something that's working for them and they keep doing it. And in the madness, I do wonder if this is actually part of it. Normally what would happen is the general concern, the excitement, what was happening with the thousands of people who were in attendance. If you had something that was working for you and you kept doing it, then you'd that's actually rarer than we think in football matches. Concerns come in, crowds get nervy, we're two ahead now, don't throw it away, boys, all of that sort of stuff. And I do think that in amongst all of these games, not just this one, I think that there's the same thing happens in the United Spurs game. There's loads of other bits and pieces that have been happening in matches where games get stuck in a certain groove and no one can get out of them. And maybe that's what crowds have been doing for years and we've just not been on it.
Yeah, I'm made up. John's raised that point because like it's amazed me. And maybe this is by design as well, that like the TV companies aren't mentioning it at all, are they? Like, yeah. And they're even the people we like on telly, are like, they're getting caught up in all of this. And there isn't enough of anybody saying, this is mad though, isn't it? Like, it's mad. We're playing footy in a really mad environment, the maddest environment there's ever been to play footy in. I remember first game of the Bundesliga season, Munich beat Schalke 8-0. And I remember thinking, that's mad. And no one's really saying that's mad. They just say Munich are brilliant, aren't they?
Get walloped by Hoffenheim, though?
Yeah, 4-0 or 4-1. Yeah.
But this is the thing, isn't it? Like, look at the result of the weekend. Leicester beat Man City 5-2 the other week. And then they got beat at home 3-0 by West Ham. And got beat 3-0 at home. And then United just get absolutely stuffed.
Did you watch City Leeds?
No.
Did anyone watch City Leeds?
Yeah,
City Leeds, John, just on this, the game takes a certain character and no one can get it out of the character. Like, normally you wouldn't just keep doing what they're doing for as long as they were doing it. And I was watching it thinking, this is berserk. And everyone thought it was a Guardiola Bielsa thing, John, didn't they?
Yeah.
But actually, I do wonder, as I say, whether or not games just get locked in a groove now. And because there isn't 30,000 maniacs, no one can quite break it.
It's like, it reminds me of training ground games. I've been lucky a bit to future training grounds and watch them, and you know these lads are just playing against each other and they're just trying to score. And if someone goes 2-0 up to the other side, they're just fuming and they just try and score straight away, and then they don't, and then everyone starts teasing each other, then it fucking gets worse. But if you watch the training round game between two of our squads and it finished like 7-2, you wouldn't be like, oh fucking hell, them lads are shit. Do you know what I mean? You'd just be like, well, that was just a mad thing, and they all ended up getting heads up. It's just like that, and there's no one's having a quiet 10 anymore, because no one can be asked.
I think that's the point. That'd be a dead interesting question. Like, how often does that happen in training? Oh, yeah. It does happen all the time, because
yeah, and tries to split them up, it's all dead even, and one team just wins.
But we see, like, and I know, like, loads of people hate it when we do this, but I love doing it. Like, at any level of footy, it doesn't matter, like, because it's all relative, isn't it? Like, if you're playing in a game and things start going mental, so firstly, your goalie, I've been in loads of games like this, your goalie just lets one in.
Yeah, like, he's crap.
I was going to say, I've been that.
looking at you, Kev.
You never turn up on go over
there. Still pissed.
Actually, it's just dawned on me. I was banging on about me and Neil being a fantastic centre back pair, and we've played in front of you. That was a masterclass. I think there's an argument we could do something for the derby here. me and Gibbo, we've got this. We discovered one day we've got this thing where we can do like incredible one touch, one twos throughout the pitch.
Yeah.
Anyway, but not that's finish. An not can't finish at all. I mean, a lot like Liverpool.
Do you know what it turns out that we've worked out? Mad enough in the first 10 minutes of this that the people ruining football, it's not Sky and it's not like FIFA or nothing, it's the fans.
Yeah,
fucking fans are causing all these shite nil nils. You don't want to watch, you know, 7-2s, mate. More of that.
Football without fans is
everything.
Football without fans is everything.
That's a hashtag. One of my cousins, the Blue Nose, he said at the weekend, he went, honest to God, he went, I reckon we're well better without. He went, think about it, what's the one thing that's changed? There's no fans in Goodison anymore.
I saw a thing before, so I said, include the pre-season, that's our third 7-2 of the year.
And that's enough. And it's only our fourth league game.
It's the third 7-2 ever. Literally ever. That's bananas.
Yeah, but imagine what that'll be like by the end of the season. It's like the pen thing, isn't it? Did you see the charts on the pen thing? Yeah. If the handball pen thing carries on by the end of the season, there'll be 88 pens just for handball. And you're like, I'm not sure that's a good idea, lads. Do you know what I mean?
But this
is the thing on the mental. Like, everyone, no one's making this point. So, this is the side that, like, it's possibly the best ever Liverpool side. They're renowned for being mentality monsters. That's what this manager calls them. And they fell apart like this. And all that shows you is no one's immune to it. When you're standing watching, and this is why I was saying to Neil before we started recording, I think there's a massive shout for they should have just started laughing in the middle of it, like we did at home, if you could, with mates and stuff. Is that if I was playing Sunday League And we were like, right, we're back in it. It's 2-1. If you stop that game at 2-1 and say to everybody, Liverpool lose their 7-2, you know, everyone would be like, oh, shut up. Then they just, when I was watching it back this morning, Joe making notes in my phone, it was like, third goal deflected, fourth goal deflected, fifth goal. It's just, if you're in that game, you're going, come on. Yeah. This is, and don't get me wrong, I know there's all the stuff about, the press and all that, and we'll get into all of that. And there is a massive thing of why you're conceding deflected goals is because you're sort of half-heartedly dangling your leg out instead of properly pressing.
Yeah.
But to concede three or four deflected goals, for your goalie to give away the first one, anyone in the world would then go, this
that's
is
what I mean. That's what I mean when I say it's because it is so wild and so nuts, it's easy to just go, just a mad anomaly that. Like, if we'd have been beat like 2-0 or 3-0, and we really look like, well, we can't put two passes together here. We looked all right going forward at times, didn't we? But then it just went to shit when they went through us. And because we haven't seen that before, it's just so much easier to say, let's put it all away.
There is something about them, strange as opponents going back years, John. They're actually more like the perception of Crystal Palace than Crystal Palace actually are, Villa. And there's something else as well. And I think any Paul mentions watching the game back. I watched the first half back this morning for me sins. And Jack Grealish is the absolute business. And I actually think that Watkins gets the hat-trick, Liverpool concede seven, and it sort of got lost in the wash a little bit that Jack Grealish is, he's the best player on the pitch on the night by an absolute mile. He's genuinely tremendous. He's terrifying to play against. He can hold the ball all day. He's completely press resistant. He genuinely should be getting talked about. That performance from Grealish last night should be getting talked about as a genuinely terrific performance given everything.
Yeah, he was great, and you know, I don't think we were quite sure who should have been picking him up as well, because he's normally a wide forward, isn't he? But he's obviously cutting in, he's finding himself, you know, sort of very central. And it's interesting, I saw an interview with him about a year ago where he talks about, you know, modelling himself almost on our front three, and everyone just thinks of him as this number 10, but he was like, you know, the manager showing me, you know, how often they're in the box and how often they're actually, you know, the wide left, but they're getting in centre and stuff, and he's saying he's watching the likes of, you know, Sadio Mane and seeing what he's doing as interior wide forward, but actually someone who's kind of, you know, a much more of a sort of central threat. And yeah, I mean, we should have dealt with him better, but he was great, and I think he's, you know, they've done so well to sort of keep hold of him, Villa, because I thought he'd go this summer, but the merry-ground that kind of were likely to make it happen, you know, hasn't necessarily, and he sort of stayed there. And I think he's going to love playing with Barkley because then runs he makes it, it's another sort of runner. But I think that is the concern when you look at us, though, is the how easy it was for runners to get in behind. And, you know, I got frustrated by a few things last night with people talking about, I feel like high line is the new zonal marking, like everyone's just decided it's shit. Do you know, we need to scrap that high line. You're like, well, we don't, do we? Do you know what I mean? Like, what are we going to do? Suddenly, like, go back to Hodgson, where we're all, you know, 11 behind the ball. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's how you do it, isn't it? But people are obviously looking at it, and people are saying, well, how can you exploit that? And it's late runs, and it's the fact that we all just stand there afterwards probably isn't great. Like, well, we've done a belter line there, so whatever happens next, is it? You know, maybe there needs to be keep your line. But then maybe you know, react afterwards once the ball's been played. I don't know. That's just one thing for the boys to look at if they want. But it was sort of a little bit too easy in terms of getting those balls. But you know, you still need someone to play them. And Grealish was doing that all day.
John Gibbons went on Five Live and said he'd rather have Jack Grealish for Aston Villa than Andres Iniesta. And Paul Cope, John Gibbons was yet again proven right.
Chris Sutton scoffed at me. Scoffed.
I saw that clip while I was away mate, and I was furious. I was like, I'm with you. I wanted to phone in the phone. Like, why are you slagging him off? He's right. Like,
imagine Iniesta couldn't have done
Iniesta
that.
Iniesta in that Villa team be absolutely crap. Do you remember when Pirlo went to, it was the, like the one of the New York teams, and they were like, he's crap. I'm like, he's not crap. He keeps playing these unbelievable through balls, and everyone looks at him and say, could pass that, mate.
Like, yeah, where's the runner?
You need to exactly that. Yeah, your point was spot on for what they need, for who he is, for what they do. I was saying to Neil before, like, there's loads of this in footy, like perception. I remember someone saying this about our analytics team, like they analyse it without watching, and they do that because loads of people go, yeah, he runs funny though, doesn't he? Like, yeah, it doesn't matter if he runs funny, he's boss. If Jack Grealish was Spanish and spoke with a Spanish accent, everyone would be like, oh my God, he's worth 150 million quid, but he's a Brummie. And that's
and a
like,
bit of a bellend.
A Brummie with a haircut.
That's it. So he was absolutely fantastic. And yeah, I agree. I don't think Iniesta would do for them what he does.
So we sorted it.
He was the absolute business, Kevin. I think there's something. So there's loads of stuff that we'll talk about, whether or not Liverpool should do better, react better, etc., etc. We'll slaughter us in a minute. And if people are waiting for us to slaughter us, don't worry, it's on its way, and we will start in the obvious places. But I think that they take a ton of chances, and they get lucky on a couple of occasions. They get lucky with the fact that we're not better around their area. They get lucky in a number of different ways. But I do think it is important when you concede 7 goals to have the ability to say, my God, the opposition must have played well, because there's 3 or 4 of their players. Watkins is a lad they've just brought in from Brentford. He hadn't scored a Premier League goal. Grealish is the absolute business. Barkley, yes, he's an Evertonian, but he's dangerous. McGinn backs everything up. Trezeguet made the pitch big, and their defenders held us up really well. My point is, they were good.
Yeah, you're not going to beat anyone. Well, you're not going to score 7 goals against anybody, let alone Liverpool, unless you are very good. And they were. There's nothing wrong with saying that. Sometimes you take a tonking. Sometimes everything you do turns to shit, and everything they touch turns to gold. Ross Barkley's coming on his debut. It's against Liverpool, and he's had an absolute worldie. You'd have probably said it was more like he's to go the other way for him, but it hasn't. And sometimes you just got to hold your hands up to that. There's nothing wrong with saying Liverpool got beat by a better team on the night. That's fine. We'll still finish above them at the end of the season. It's not to denigrate Liverpool by saying Villa played well. As you say, we can slaughter Liverpool in a minute, but Villa deserve a lot of credit for what he did.
Joe Gomez.
Fuck it. Do you know what? In the end, I felt sorry for him. When he come back out for the second half, I just thought, I know all of the perception of being withdrawn at half time, but you're not telling me Gomez wouldn't have gone thank fuck for that at half time, because he was having an absolute nightmare.
It starts with the keeper, I think. It starts with the opener. I think the opener just completely wrecks his head. I think he weirdly felt at fault for the opener, and he very much wasn't, but I think he thought he was.
If it might be the case. If that is the case and he's listening,
I was trying to remember what the first goal was. I know it now. Can't keep him a shy squad, that's weird.
If Joe Gomez is worrying about it, believe me, it was fucking Adrian's fault, as was a lot of the issues. I've seen a picture of one of their attacks today, and our line it's high, fucking hell. It'd be high if you had Alisson in goal, but Alisson would be on the edge of his box near enough where this picture is, and Adrian is literally in a 6-yard box. So the centre half must be thinking, listen, we know he's not that good, and also, where the fuck is his position? Why isn't he in the position where he's trained to be every single day? And what you suggest there is it's probably the fact that Adrian's played a full football career, literally a full career up until this point, with one style, which is very much a withdrawn goalkeeper who tries to make saves. Whereas what we need from him, and in order to keep the centre-halves true to their game, is someone to step up further and play a more of a sweeper role, and Adrian can't do that.
I'll come to you then. This is one of my key questions. I was just going to do Gomez, Arnold and Fabinho, and then move on to what I've labelled my key questions, but I'll do the keeper one with you now then.
Go on.
So, genuinely, the transfer deadline is today. Alisson, first and foremost, for a goalkeeper, is proven to be mildly injury-prone. Should Liverpool be looking for a keeper who suits the style a little bit more today? Should they have been looking for one through the window a little bit more?
Yeah, in short, yes. I think... And it wouldn't surprise me if they can see somebody out there and think he would be better for us here. The issue you've got is we've got the best goalkeeper in the world when he's fit. Now, listen, is he injury prone? He's had a couple of injuries on the bounce that could just be unlucky. The one in training supposed to be he's been absolutely clattered. So it's the sort of the Joe Gomez thing from last year. These are not muscle injuries, they're impact injuries. So if that's the case, it is what it is. What I would say is The one benefit we've got of having Adrian, and there's not many if we're being honest because he's not very good, is the fact that he's a bit of a Dejan Lovren. I think his own sense of self-worth is enormous, so I don't think he'll be overly worried about getting tonked 7-2, or he might be for a week, but then he's got another week to lead into the Everton game and just think, well, I'll go again. The problem you're going to have is he's likely to make another mistake, and then the more mistakes he makes, it's how it spreads throughout the team. Then if we could get a goalkeeper in who was willing to see, and I think it's impossible to get a goalkeeper in, because what are you going to say to him? Come and play these next 6 games, and if you're good, you might get another chance in 3 years' time. You know what I mean? It's just not going to work.
This is a key question, I think, though, John. Some lad grabbed me before the kickoff, and I said, well, I'd probably rather have Adrian than Everton's lad in general, and I think there is
100%,
and I think there is still a general sort of, you can, because we've got the best one, you sort of forget what the ones who aren't the best one look like.
Yeah.
And in terms of what we'd be looking for, I just think it's so hard to find someone who's a step down from the best one, but in a way that would mean he'd be happy being second choice, but in a way where he's got a certain skill set that suggests he's good enough to play for a really good team, but we need the one who's, but he's nowhere near as good as the best one because we accept the best one's the best one, if you see what I mean. Is that fair?
I think so, yeah. I think I followed that. I think it's, you know, as you've both said, it's a style thing as well. So we see, oh, why can't we have, like, I saw someone mention Jack Butland before, do you know what I mean? I think Jack Butland's a fine keeper, but, like, is he going to have the same problems that Kev was talking about before, where he's just stood in the wrong place for what we need to and what we're used to and what sort of, you know, has been sort of ingrained with him? I don't know. And so there's only, you know, when you're actually put together everything that you want and everything you need and everything you expect, I think it probably is difficult. And I think that's not to say that, you know, it's Michael Edwards' job to go and find him, and I'm fine to say that, well, yeah, it's hard, but that's your job, so sort it. And I'm sort of okay with that now. But I think anyone who's expecting them to do anything today is in for a bit of a, you know, a disappointing 10 o'clock or whenever it is, because, you know, that's not how the club work. That's never how it's been. It'll be sort of a long-term, you know, thing, and they'd have done it by now if they were going to. But it just is frustrating because he you know, it's straight away, isn't it? And you're trying to be positive, and I'm like, well, look, early last season he had that great run and blah blah blah, and then he just does stuff straight away, and like he makes a dickhead out of you. But at the same time, it's a crap pass. Like, why are we hitting that pass to him? And that's what annoys me, is that, you know, if you've got a keeper who's not great in that situation, don't give him a ball. He has to chest down in the fourth minute. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's an overhit pass, a heavy one. The best thing you can do there is chest it down and get rid. So if that's the best thing the keeper can do, just fucking get rid of it yourself. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm all for using the keeper if you're like, if you're working an angle for a pass, or you're running back towards him and you think, well, I'll just knock it off to him and he'll go to the other fullback and you're laughing. I'm all for using him as an outfield player. But you won't give an outfield player that pass. If Naby Keita was struggling in midfield, he won't go, I'll just twat it back to Virgil. Do you know what I mean? Like, you won't give a defender that pass. So why would you do it for the keeper?
I think that's a really good point, and it goes back to last year. And then again, it's mad that they don't say these things on telly where they're paid to talk about this stuff. The exact same thing happened last year. Alisson got injured. I can't remember what game it was. I've got Southampton.
First game. It was first game. Against Norwich. And Adrian comes in. He plays the Super Cup. He comes on against Norwich, plays the Super Cup final, gets injured by a fan, and then starts against Southampton. Big week.
Was the Southampton game a mistake?
Yeah.
Because I didn't mean Alisson made a mistake against Southampton.
No,
as well,
he makes a mistake. He makes
a mistake. And what happened, I remember, and this wasn't talked about, and it just looked like this happened, and maybe it didn't, and maybe it's confirmation bias. But what it looked like happened after that game was, the defence had a little chat and went, so he's not Alisson, is he? So let's look after him and let's stop going back to him all the time. And I'm sure there was a thing back then of the statistics, the number of passes that went back to the keeper. And as soon as Robertson turned, and this can look like, you know, hindsight and all that, as soon as Robertson hooked that ball back towards Adrian last night, my first thought was, lads, you're doing the same thing again. Not Alisson. You all need to remember that's not Alisson.
That's a really
and we persisted with it through the game. There was one in the second half where Adrian tried to, like, ping one out to Trent, and he just went over his head out. And Trent looked at him as if to say, that was shite.
But the thing, as you said, that they know it's kicking shite, exactly. So why are they giving him the ball?
But is there a thing here where it's the first 4 minutes of the match, he's under some pressure, Robertson, Villa have started fast, and in his head he just goes, I'll just go back to keeper here because that's what I do.
Muscle memory, that's what's coached into them. So what you get to next there is saying, well, the problem doesn't come from the players. The players are manifesting the problem that's being coached into them then. So are we saying that Klopp needs to say to them, we don't go back to this goalkeeper? Now, that might say to this goalkeeper, we don't trust you. But Klopp's got to be good enough with the man management to say, listen, it's not that we don't trust you as the goalkeeper. We've got you in and you're going to play the games, but we need to change our style with you, because if we keep doing this, it's not going to work and you're going to get the blame.
It's worth saying as well, and you conceded 7 goals, so this might sound like it's insane. He's awful with his feet. That goes for most keepers. So you can sort that, like we did last year. Stop giving him the ball so much. When he gets the ball, say to him, just go long. Don't worry about that. He actually pulls off 2 or 3 really good saves.
Yeah.
The one-on-one's brilliant. The one Barkley near post is a bit unconventional, but still saves it. That's what he's there for. We've seen he's capable of doing that. So you just need to protect him in that bubble again, and it's only for a few games, hopefully, this time.
Gomez, really, really poor. Trent Alexander-Arnold has a very poor game as well, Paul. Fabinho starts poor first half. Second half, I think he improves. I think he's the one of the especially poorer performers who manages to find a level within the football match and assert himself, but Gomez and Trent both have pretty abject evenings.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, look, you can get all complex and analyse it to the nth degree. I think sometimes you just have a bad day. And again, anyone who's ever played footy, it's that mad thing of sometimes you just turn up and you're like when you play the game, you turn up and you're like, my legs just aren't with it today for some reason. I don't know what it is.
There's that, but I think it's also that they're up against direct Grealish. So Gomez is getting legged going one way by Watkins. He ends up with Grealish in front of him on a few occasions. And I think Grealish realises Alexander-Arnold's not having a good day, Gomez isn't having a good day, Fabinho's coming over, he's not having a good day, Naby Keita got hooked at half time. I think he absolutely exploits Aminir big time.
There's loads of, and this is the thing I said I think is so fascinating about this game to analyse, is there's so many moving parts to this that all of those things come together. Now, if you're Gomez going into this game, think about this even just from a psychological perspective. You're not going into this game thinking, this is going to be one of the toughest games of the season for me up against Ollie Watkins. You're thinking, I'm Joe Gomez, I'm boss, I play next to Virgil van Dijk, we've got our first choice back four, and okay, this fella's behind us, but he's all right, and we won games, so it should be okay. Ollie Watkins is causing him absolute nightmares from the start. He started the game with this thing with his keeper, where he's exposed, and as you said, how much is that in his head? Because actually, I know you can say it's Adrian, I'm looking at Gomez even in that and thinking, I don't know what you're doing there, mate. Yeah. I don't know what your positioning is. This sounds like a ridiculous thing to say. If I'm Joe Gomez, he's well better than me at defending. But cut off the pass to the fella who's standing on the pen spot. Like, that's your most dangerous thing. If he wants to have a shot on his left foot, your goalie's standing there already. He sort of catches himself in between, nothing. Now, straight away, that can be spinning in his head. Then you've got the fans thing. Then you've got all the other... The other big thing about the mentality monsters is, and no one mentions this, when you've got a team of mentality monsters, you also have kings of the mentality monsters within that squad. So you can just go, yeah, Mane and Henderson are out injured. And you're like, yeah. Would we say they're two of our biggest mentality monsters? Look at the Arsenal game the week before. Jesus Christ. Mane starts the Villa game like he does against Arsenal. Straight away, Arsenal were like, who's this lad? Have you not fed him all week? Jesus Christ, honestly, when he got booked for the first one, I was like, he could have had two bookings. Yeah. Straight away, just flattened Bellerin, like, yeah, you're not in this game, lad. Bellerin's like, no, you're right, I'm not. He's not in your side. And Jordan Henderson, there was a boss little cliff, it might have been at 6 or 7, it went on to Henderson's face, and he was sort of doing that thing with Joe Tongue in the side of his cheek. Mm. Like, right, wait till I get this out. Yeah, basically that. And all of that, like the Henderson thing especially, I talk about this a lot. Henderson is down that side of the pitch. And when you've got, everyone forgets how, because they're so good and you can forget this, how young those players still are. Sometimes they need someone like Jordan Henderson as the captain to just go, I'll come and help you sort this out. Let's just sort this out for 10 minutes. They haven't got that. There's so many things in this.
Well, this is where, to come back to John, on your no one decides, we'll just have a quiet 10.
Yeah.
And I think that, for instance, at 2-1, there's a really strong, nothing happens here, we get into half-time now, 2-1, but there's no one on the pitch who feels, by the time you get to that stage of the game, like they're in control of what's happening enough to be able to do that. And I mean that in certain circumstances they could do it, but Van Dijk's head's chocker, you know, Fabinho's struggling out there, Gini's forcing it like no one's business on the left and actually playing quite well, but he doesn't go and get a grip of it. I think there's definitely an element there, isn't there, John, where, you know, this is back to the whether or not it's an underlying thing or a one-off where everything goes for Villa. There was no one just to sort of say it's all right if not much happens here now.
Yeah, and I think, look, that was partly how Villa wanted to play as well, and so you've got to sort of bear that in mind, is that you can sort of say, oh, you know, we'll have a quiet 10 and we'll take a bit of a sting out, but if as soon as they get it they just go boom and launch it, then and they've got five up front somehow, then it's always good. I think they wanted it to be sort of a bit chaotic, and so you've always sort of got, you know, that challenge really, but they should have done it better. And look, you know, missing Henderson, you know, I mean, you got to remember Thiago's been brought in. I don't want to say too much on we missed Thiago because we've only had him like a week, but I think he has been brought in for that, for, you know, for his experience, you know, for the older head, for the older sense and stuff like that as well. So I think, you know, you really sort of could have come with him, but I think as I say, what Villa did, sort of, you know, we talk about, you know, the Klopp quote of dragging us down to their level, like that's what Villa just dragged it down to, sort of a mad game, and you do have to give them credit, and I'm glad both the manager and the captain on the night did do that, because, you know, sometimes you do have to.
Key questions then. We've slaughtered some people. Others may well get it as we go right the way through, Kev. But is this an underlying thing, or is it just a one-off where everything goes for Villa? And or is it both? Is it that there's a couple of things that Liverpool are going to have a look at in an underlying way? Which way does this go at this stage of proceedings? Because that is the key question. Next game is up against high-flying Everton at Goodison Park. Liverpool then, they've got to deal with West Ham in the near future, who look very, very capable of dragging people down to a certain level. Is this underlying issues for the Reds, or is it just something that helps Aston Villa?
I think underlying issues makes it sound like there's something you can just, like a magic wand, and you say, right, well, this is what, that's, we've sorted that, we've done this, and now it's over. Football's not like that. We, as good as we are, and as much as we want to get it all our own way, other teams get to be good as well, and other teams get to have players who can exploit certain weaknesses in our team. Now, every team's got weaknesses in it. Ours happen to be, our weaknesses are just at a higher level than other teams. But when that happens, and you have the weakness in our team, if you were to look at it, and what teams often try to exploit is, as Kobe said, that right-hand side. And Leeds done it effectively on the first game of the season. Villa done it really well again yesterday. And they are two young players, and they will grow into it. But even if we sort that out, it doesn't. That's not to say that you often reference that everyone's played each other once now, and everyone's got the videos. So every other team is looking at our game, and no one's going, oh, we're just throwing them 6 points away this season, because it doesn't happen like that, because you can't afford to do that in this league. And at the moment, because it's so wild, you don't need to. So teams will have looked at Liverpool and gone, okay, well, Virgil van Dijk and Andy Robertson on that side, you're probably not going to get much joy. Go the other side, that's fine. And also, they're probably looking going, all right, well, Naby Keita's in that midfield, and when he plays well, he plays really, really well. But when he doesn't, and when you get him turned around, and when he's looking at his own goal, he's a problem for them. And he is sometimes. We praised him to high heaven last week after our Arsenal game, because he'd done some fantastic work off the ball, all the stuff that we didn't think he could do. And then this week, he didn't do it. So what I'm getting at is, We might well fix the problems that caused us to lose 7-2 yesterday and batter Everton 4-0 next week. That's not to say that someone else won't work out another problem for us going forward. And what Liverpool need to do is just make sure that the hunger remains in the squad, which I don't think is going to be an issue, and making sure that we're improving and we're better every single day we go into training.
John, there's something here that's interesting around auras. Part of why things work for Liverpool is how much they believe and how much the opponents believe Liverpool's aura. But also there is a thing about an aura, which is you have to earn it with reality. There needs to be something that it's based on. You don't just get given one. You know, that's happened to very, very, very few sides in football history. It sort of happens if someone makes a good flick for a Brazil team in a World Cup, everyone will go Brazil or back. Apart from that, it very rarely happens. Is there something here where Liverpool ultimately need to accept that maybe sides have had a little bit enough, I've decided I've had enough of the aura, and I just sort of thinking to themselves, well, last season we tried to sit in and keep it safe, and they won 26 out of the first 27 games. Shall we instead try to score a shitload of goals and make it a bit crazy?
I mean, they will be looking at it, and it's just like Kev says, the teams, you know, they're not just going to sit back and go, oh, Liverpool, you know, what are you meant to do? You know, the managers will be looking at it, they'll be, you know, looking at different things. So, well, can we exploit this? Okay, they are a high line. You know, there's pros and cons to that. Is there a way of using these runners, or is there a way of you know, using sort of balls over the top or late surges or whatever it might be? You know, people will be looking at things, and then that's where the team just needs to evolve, and that's where, you know, the Klopp and Pep Linders and all the team will be aware of that. Oh, people are starting to do this against us more now. How are we going to combat that? And that's where, you know, you're changing. This team's changed since Jürgen Klopp's come in. You know, he's not just come in and said, oh, this is how I'm playing and this is it forever. You know, it has evolved. Different players have come in, asked to do different things. You know, Thiago is meant to be the further sort of evolution of this team, if you like, that's going to you know, improve us in sort of certain situations. And so they'll have looked at that and think, first of all, well, what should we have done better on the pitch? And I can't believe that they've just, you know, I can't believe that Liverpool will be looking at that and going, shit, we've been found out. Instead, it'll be like, what the fuck was he doing there? Do you know what I mean? It'll be like, and he's already talked a bit about it after the game. He said, well, you know, if you've got all the time in the world to play a pass, then you can look like fucking Beckenbauer, can't you? Whereas although, you know, obviously Beckenbauer wears Jack Grealish pyjamas now, but I think, like, you know, it's easy to, we made them look good by not just the way we play, but sort of how, you know, our intensity levels just weren't there, you know, we weren't sort of pressing enough, we weren't in their face enough, and it was just all a bit too sort of nice for Aston Villa, really. And look, when you talk about this, the things to be concerned about, they're not going to be that nice against Everton, fucking hell, like, just absolutely no chance, especially not now.
We've mentioned the getting through 10 thing. It's something that they're struggling with. Thiago and Henderson are both good shouts in amongst that, arguably possibly in quite different ways, and I'd expect them both to start against Everton, actually looking a couple of weeks ahead, Paul. The one thing you would say, though, in a first 11 sort of sense, is it's a performance yesterday that makes it a little tricky around Firmino, in that he sort of could have done with being either type of the number nine that he isn't. He could either have done with being someone who just gets it and holds it up all day for you and brings people into play that way rather than the way he brings people into play, although he does hold the ball up quite well at times. Or he could have done with being the sort of number nine who gets a sniff and finishes. And yesterday, for the first half an hour, he is emphatically neither. And then he's very shit at being Roberto Firmino. And that causes a massive problem when you're coming away from the game.
Yeah, I feel like I need to take some responsibility for it, because we were talking about it in the review I did last week about Minamino and like what Minamino needs to do to get his teammates' trust to play in that position. And I was raving about Firmino and all the things Firmino does in that position. And then he just went, nah, I'm not going to do that this week, mate.
None of those things,
by the way. None of them. Like the number of times the ball went into him and he just gave it away. And it was
like bouncing off him,
literally. You can bring football down to really basic analysis, and lots of people don't like that these days, but you've got a few key players out and then you've got one of the best centre-halves on the planet, Joe Gomez, and maybe the best lad on the planet at doing what he does in that position, Firmino, who literally look like it's the twin brothers playing. And we've had that loads in the past, and we're like, lad, I don't know. Like, it's like you've never kicked a footy before in your life. And when that happens in that, such an important part of the pitch, it's so key down there, and that's what we were talking around Minamino about. Your teammates have got to trust you so much, and so we've talked about the psychological impact of what's going on the other end. If at the top end of the pitch you keep giving it to the lad you can trust implicitly every week, and every time you give it to him he gives it away and they're straight back at you and exposing the spaces, everyone then focuses on the midfield and says midfielder crap. The midfielder's like, lad, but you, like, if you don't keep hold of the ball there, we're exposed, because we've already made the movement to do the next bit, and now Villa can do what they need to do. And this is where, for me, all of the things fall. When Klopp said, you know, you get one side that's brilliant and we have to give them credit for that. Kev said that 100%. But also, that side doesn't beat us 7-2 unless we're absolutely abysmal in low to the pitch. And that is an issue around Firmino. Is it a big issue? Time tells, doesn't
it? It's a tightrope act, I think, Kev. Liverpool in general is a tightrope act. We know that if you're playing at the level we're playing at, there's a lot that you've got to ensure keeps going right, and that's why we've hit the heights that we've hit. But with Firmino's maybe the strongest exemplar of the fact that it's a tightrope act. And yesterday, I mean, he barely makes one step on the tightrope. He just keeps falling off it over and over again. And it is, but it does hurt Liverpool in quite a significant way. And as I say, I think you can get away with not being the sort of number nine who bangs 30 in a season in all comps if you're doing the other stuff on a very regular basis. And that yesterday is an example of stinking the place out that will lead to people saying, not sure we want to persevere with this, you know, because I'd rather have a lad who just bangs the chances in and then it's 3-3.
Yeah, and if you take yesterday's game on its own, you'd be like, oh, he's on a decline or whatever. And I've seen a few people sort of taking the last maybe 9 months or so and criticising him for it. The problem you've got is, Paul's alluded to it there, what he does, and he's such a major part of it, when he falls down, the rest of it falls down, because as you say, it's the moves that people make when he's got the ball, because they know what he can do with it. When he doesn't do it, it doesn't work. So there's a lot of pressure on Firmino to perform there, but I think what I would say is Klopp's obviously seen that this is eventually going to become an issue. Now, whether he's been Nostradamus and realised it was going to be this season and he's going to fall off a cliff, I hope that doesn't happen, and I don't personally think it will. But that's what Minamino's been brought in for, isn't it? To give us another number nine option, as in a false nine. I don't think we're going to see another, not this season anyway, you won't see a number nine come in to play at the front with three behind them. And Firmino is never going to be able to play that position, because he's made to feed other people, and Minamino is made for that as well. if teams are working out that if you stop Firmino, you're creating holes in other areas of the pitch due to the runs that are made, okay, then Liverpool might need to change things around. And what we'd need then is a number nine who can do the other things, as you've just said, to play at the point with three in behind them. Again, Firmino can't do that, and we don't have another number nine in the squad. The only one we did have was Rian Brewster, and he's now gone to Sheffield United. So I think if it is going to become a problem with Firmino, I personally don't think it is, but if it does, I think you'll see a lot more of Minamino, and I don't think you'll see much change in the formation.
Yeah, the thing is with Firmino as well is he hasn't scored in the first four league games, and like, no one's particularly surprised. Mm-hmm. And whereas if it was Salah, you'd be like, oh, fucking hell, he's not scored in the first four. That's a bit mad, isn't it? Or even Mane, you know, be the same with Firmino. He's like, oh, yeah, well, he's sort of what he does. Do you know what I mean? He just goes a bit without scoring. But then at the same time, you won't be surprised if he sort of gets a big winner against Everton. But I just think, you know, he's not even really sort of looking like scoring anymore. And so I know there's other things he's offering in theory, but if you're not offering them as well, then it's just a case of, you know, you're looking around. We were talking before about the evolution of the team and things like that, and you know, is there someone out there who can do what he does, you know, for the team, you know, maybe not quite as high, but be much more of a goal threat, because at the moment he's not even sort of really getting in the positions, is he? And then so if he has a sort of bad game like there, then I mean, it was a bit like sort of like playing with 10 with him, and I mean, I don't know how many with the other lads we ended up, you know, what honestly we were playing with. But you know, I just don't want us to get to a situation where we're like, you know, because people can have bad runs of form and people can have, you know, periods where it's not quite happening for him, but because we're so now out of the front three, like, I worry that we've got into a situation where we can't just change it and take him out for a bit. Like, I think at most other clubs or other times in our history, if a lad's struggling, you're just like, we'll just put him on the bench for a bit. We'll give him a couple of runs out, you know, play cup games or whatever, and then you'll get your form back and you'll be all right. But we've seemed to have got into a sort of situation, and hopefully, you know, I mean, Jota's obviously meant to help with that, and Minamino, you know, where it's just, well, they're just playing. And I don't think that's necessarily healthy for the team or even particularly good for him, to be honest with you.
Okay. It is one that will continue to move forward, that question. I've got another little one, Kev, and again, feels remarkably harsh on the greatest centre-half on the planet. For me, the most important footballer on the planet. I think he is the footballer who is the best in his position by a distance to any other player, in the same way that Messi and Ronaldo used to be streets ahead. Whether you want to have the argument between them, I always think Messi's far better. But Messi and Ronaldo were streets ahead of every other attacker, and there was a huge gulf for me. There's a huge gulf from Virgil van Dijk to every other centre-half on the planet. You can fuck off with Koulibaly. I haven't got the time for it. But I am mildly concerned with Virgil when he's captain. I think he doesn't quite, for me, hit the same heights. I think he's left with a lot of the team to worry about, and I sort of think Virgil's at his best when he's worried about the three lads around and the goalkeeper behind him and maybe the holding midfielder in front of him.
Yeah, I've never thought about that, to be honest. And if you'd have asked me who was captain yesterday, I wouldn't have known off the top of my head. The captaincy, I don't know. I think he's just had a shit game yesterday. I don't think it has that much of an effect on him, because as a centre-half, there's not that much captaining you can do with the front three or the midfielders that are 35, 40 yards away from you. And I'm pretty sure Klopp won't be saying to him, listen, lad, you're the captain today, so what I need from you is to change all your normal things and go and do this. I think Klopp's probably just, listen, here's the armband, who wants it, type of thing. We're a team full of leaders, we always say. And just because we've had one, listen, it's an abysmal performance, it's an abysmal result, and it looks like a stain on this season. But again, this season's fucking mad, and there's probably going to be more mad games like that. For me, if we have got worries, and there's a few certain worries keeping in, Virgil van Dijk isn't one of them. Virgil van Dijk has got enough credit in the bank with every single, not just Liverpool fan, football fan in the world, that to say, okay, he's had a shit game there, and just move on past it. There's a video doing the rounds on Twitter today of Jack Grealish absolutely tying him in fucking knots. But as we now know, it's Messi, Ronaldo, Grealish, isn't it? So it's one of them things. It's happened to him. But again, he's the type of player who, by the time he comes back from international duty, will just be like, give me Everton and let me go and show what I can do and put me back into the normal swing of things. And listen, obviously, what we do is we talk about the football and some people may have concerns, and I'm just getting rid of them there. But if we've got issues, he's the very, very, very last one of them, and I'm even putting him behind Manny there. Like, that's how highly I rate him.
Okay. Want to talk about four players, John, who arguably play really well for an hour. It's not fair to do this and not actually refer to the fact that some Liverpool players play pretty well, especially under the circumstances, but not just. Three of them are down the left-hand side. I think all of Robertson, Wijnaldum and Jota. I thought Robertson in particular was arguably the second best player on the pitch for an hour. And Mo Salah also gets a brace.
Yeah, all of that is true. I think Jota, you know, to highlight him, you know, the fact that he's come in and just hit the ground running is a real positive. You know, he looks like a Liverpool player. He looks like he's building good understandings. You know, obviously with his fullback, you saw them two linking up really well together a few times. You know, I think there's one or two moments where he's a little bit, oh, who's going to hit that type thing. There was obviously the one with Salah in the last game, and then I think there was one with Keita this time where he's probably just being like a little bit too polite because he's the new lad. But that's a very small thing. Apart from that, he just looks like he's fitted in really well, and I think intelligent players do that, don't they? They just sort it out quicker, and that's a real good sign to show that, you know, he's a clever player as well as a dangerous one, really. So really pleased with Jota, with how well he started. Obviously getting a goal in that first game sort of really helped him, but he was a danger, and I think it's credit to him as well to how we worked out quite quickly that left hand side was where we were going to be dangerous, and Trent hardly saw the ball the other side, really, you know, from an attacking point of view. You know, I know we say we didn't sort of play well, but you know, this is one of the positives of Liverpool. I mean, there's loads, sort of, you know, generally speaking, obviously not many at the weekend, but you know, if something works, we just sort of go, okay, sound, that's where, let's just keep doing that. Do we work it out? And I think we worked out that we were getting joy down that left-hand side, and we kept sort of hitting it. And that's credit to Jota, who's, as I say, the new lad, but we kept going there. And I thought him and Robertson, as I say, together, both individually played well, but also linking up really well. And that's a positive sign, because I think last year we were a bit like, well, who is there who can come in the front three and generally like not make us either look a bit weaker or look a bit sort of out of step? But he doesn't look out of step at all. He looks great.
Yeah, and look, what am I? It's like I don't do this show very often anymore, and it's like I'm doing my greatest hits today. The Mo Salah thing as well. Like, I think just adding more weight to the argument, he's the most underrated player in our history, which sounds like an incredible thing to say, because on the quiet, he started the season absolutely on fire. Mm. And Joe, we talk about, there's been loads of talk about Mane for obvious reasons, been talk about Firmino for the opposite reasons, and just quietly along just side, and Mo Salah's just, I was a bit worried about him coming into the season. Will he have the same hunger? Will he have the same desire? All of that has been there. There were times last night where it's almost helping out the young lads at the back. He was still tracking back. He was still getting stuck in. And his two finishes are just absolutely incredible together. Yeah. And no one mentions them. And that's the difference, I think. Firmino did actually have it 1-0 watching it back, and I'd forgotten him. He had two really, really good chances and fluffed them both. Like, there was a one-on-one, very tight and in the box, and just hits the keeper. Mo Salah too, you watch them back and you're like, God, he makes them look so, so easy. This is one of the greatest strikers on the planet, one of our best strikers of all time. So there are still, and this is the other thing, everyone, and again, this ties into the pseudo-psychology bullshit, as people say about it online, but like, we get caught up in the anxiety of all of this. We live in a really mad, weird world at the moment. This result is going to make people lose their heads. There's loads in it still. There's loads of stuff in there that it's all right. Like, it's absolutely fine. One thing is worth saying, and it must have been in your coverage of when we signed Thiago, one of my favourite stories of him was, I think it might have been a Leipzig game when he was playing for Munich and they were getting battered. And his attitude in the dressing room at our time was basically, if he was his coach, he'd be like, who the fucking hell do they think they are? And I can see him being like that with us, Joe, when he comes back in, like, lads, you're the champions of Europe, the champions of the world, the champions of England in the last two seasons. It comes back to the thing as well of, I love Jamie Carragher, but on telly last night, doing the whole, Joe, 5-2, if that's me, if that's my side, we just shut up shop, we just take our medicine, we get out. And John and Kev both said earlier, I think, that's not how we got to where we are. Like, fair play, Jamie, but the managers you played under and the stuff we won under those managers, we didn't get the league. We won a league by doing what we do. And the reason this happened last night was, all the way through that game, no matter what was happening, our lads were like, can probably still get back in this, can't
we? Yeah, yeah.
Like a
5-2.
Yeah, just got. You could see them doing that. Most scores is second goal, and he's like, get the next goal.
I thought, honestly, at 5-2, I genuinely thought if we get the next goal here, we could win this.
It's on.
I did. When you consider how shit we were playing, but the players must do the same thing as you say. They go, listen, you're having a fucking nightmare, Ian Abbey, but if you just bang one of them 20 yards in, lads, it'll all be forgotten and we'll be flying again. And that's why, again, I've said like 3 or 4 times now, that's why it's so easy to just say, listen, I normally write it off and just think Everton are going to fucking get it. Yeah.
On that, Kev. Watching the games yesterday, I watched United versus Spurs, and the commentary on that was a bit mad in that they just talked endlessly about United when Spurs were winning 6-1. But one of the things that I thought about all of that, Neville started to chat about, you know, that he played in some United drubbings down the years, got done 5-0 at Newcastle, he mentioned that one, 6-3 at Southampton, there was a Chelsea one that got mentioned. And Tyler was at pains to point out that in every single one of them, United went on and won the league. And one of the things, and we do end up talking about him a bit more now than maybe some people are comfortable with, but one of the things that Ferguson and United were great at was getting beat. They were really good at getting beat, taking the medicine and turning it into something else. And that's now the challenge for this Liverpool side. They've had the 6-3 at Southampton. They've had the wallop and that everyone in the world goes, what about? And instead, now the next phase of what that Ferguson United side would be to say, right, we go on the march now for a number of games. We turn it into something else.
That's the mentality monsters side of it. That's exactly what the great teams do. And we are a great team. Getting one Tonkin does not take it. It doesn't detract from all the things that we've done, as Kopi's just said, over the last two seasons. It just doesn't. So the players, that's why the players will be able to say, you were shite, you were shite, you were shite. And the players who were shite will go, listen, hands up, I was terrible. What are we going to do about next week? What is the plan for next week? What do we need to change anything? Do we not? Do we just write it off? And they can have full and frank conversations from a position of power. They're not going, there's no one in that squad going, fucking hell, I am in serious trouble here. If I have one more of them, I'm out the door. Everyone's just going, it was mad that yesterday, wasn't it? Like, you can imagine Robbo and Trent texting each other going, fucking hell, lad, what went on there yesterday? That type of attitude. And fans might not want to hear that because they might. You made a good point before, Neil, saying about the fans. Some fans have taken it so badly because they're sitting in their house on their own watching it. They've got no one to bounce it off. Whereas the players, I've got someone to bounce it off. They've got to talk to each other today. Someone will be on international duty to each other or whatever. But none of them will be going, this season's a write-off and we're not going to win the league. I think they'll all be looking at it and going, okay, we draw a line under it. Similar to the Tottenham, when Tottenham absolutely tonked us a couple of years ago and Lovren got taken off. Similar to that, just say, okay, well, this has happened to us before. We've been battered and we've done exactly what we need to do after. And as you say, go on a 10-game winning run, or I don't know whether a 10-game winning run is going to be possible this season for anybody, but whatever this season equivalent of that is, that's what Liverpool will be aiming to do. And because of the mentality they built up over the last 2 years, I think that's exactly what we will do.
Yeah, I think as well, it'll really help us that we've got players coming back as well. So it's not like the same 11 lads here asking to go again. I think it's the fact that, you know, we know Mane will be back. We know Thiago will be back. You know, Henderson's obviously on the bench. He just didn't decide to use him. That's right, isn't it? Yeah, which is sort of fair enough, really, in terms of where the game was by the time they could have. And so all three of them should be available for the next game. And they're, you know, big personalities, the great footballers, but also, you know, as I say, too early probably to call Thiago a leader, but certainly in terms of Henderson and Mane, they are, and stuff like that. So I don't think they necessarily, you know, I mean, look, they could send them 11 lads out and I'm sure they'd make a better fist of it. But I think that does help. Okay, be captains in. Okay, you know, Thiago, if he decides to pick him, you know, he's a winner, isn't he? And Sadio Mane, he's just Sadio Mane, isn't he? He's fucking boss. And so I think that'll help us as well. And I think they'll be able to go into that with, you know, we think just with a determination to put it right and a determination to sort of make up, you know, for what's gone on. And they'll know by then what went wrong, and they'll probably know by now, you know, more or less. But then they'll watch the videos of certain situations of how they, you know, you can't allow people to do that. They will hurt you. You can't go in without that attitude. And I go back to what I said right at the start: is you've got to remember for these players, it is just all a bit mad. Like, they're not even in changing rooms, are they? They're in like fucking
porter cabins
in car parks, or getting ready, and then going out to empty things with silence. And you can understand sometimes where the intensity drops, but it's not going to be dropping at Trafford. We won't there, but it won't be at Goodison Park either. And I think, you know, they'll just be raring to go. And I don't know. I haven't really dipped into Everton Twitter over the weekend. I presume they're still trying to get songs to number one and all that. But I think, like, I wouldn't be surprised if a few of them are like, oh, shit, that's actually a bad result for us. Do you know what I mean? Because I think I'd probably be the same.
Yeah. All right, then. Thank you very much indeed, John Gibbons, Paul Cope and Kev Walsh. It's been the Anfield Wrap this week. Loads of stuff you can read on the website. Loads of stuff you can listen to if you subscribe. And loads of stuff that you can watch on video. All the absolute business across the board. It's going to be a big international break for us. The Anfield Wrap will be, for the first time ever, closing the office for a few days. There'll still be the shows if you subscribe, but it means the free show will be Tuesday next week rather than Monday. We're taking the opportunity with the international break during the intense season, so shows are getting pre-recorded and will be put out over Thursday, Friday and Monday. But this is just me making you aware that we won't be as active as normal over that period, and we'll be back with you with this show on Tuesday. We'll have the Weekender for you if you're only a free show listener on Thursday. That will be coming out then, but that's how we're going about it, because, you know, everyone needs a rest from time to time. Maybe Liverpool needed one before Aston Villa. See you next time. Sports Social Podcast Network.